SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Thursday. Race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website as well, stevebick.com. Yesterday, watching with interest as some cards came together for Saturday, we were already fully engulfed in Saturday's action at Parks. We'll talk to Haskin later. We'll get some thoughts from him. Tony Black, of course, who's won himself a Pennsylvania Derby and a Cotillion in his outstanding 5,200 win career. We'll talk to Tony. And, we do actually, Tony can also maybe lend some insight because the siblings from the Richie Vega barn, yeah, Collegeville girl and her sister who has frankly disappointed. We talked to Tony about her. That was Mrs. Phelps. They got siblings on the card on Saturday. I did all the capping on the Parks card, and you know this really is. I think we say this every year. It just gets better and better, and you judge it not just by the fields and the stakes. You got the three graded stakes. You've got the converted race that the last 4 years they've called the Pennsylvania Derby Champion Stake, which was kind of a fun little concept, a stake named in honor each year of the previous year's Pennsylvania Derby winner. That was at a mile and a 16th. They've cut that back to a mile, and they're calling it the Parks Dirt Mile, but it's essentially the same race that they were running the last 4 years under a different moniker. The Turf Amazon, and then the two state breds, the Alphabet Soup and the Plum Pretty. And the Alphabet Soup is just that. You better use all the vowels and consonants you can find to spell out a win. I thought there were some really good pricing opportunities the way this card is going to unfold. You know, there's a few races, obviously, where, you know, the favorites, notably Guarana and Serengeti Empress and the Cotillion, they obviously, comes down in a lot of ways to the two of them. However, you know, they're Jaywalk, Bellafina, Horologist, Street Band, a little bit of Jeltran, but you know, a couple of these races, the Gallant Bob, you've got the two California Invaders, Hollendorfer with King Jack, O'Neill with Landeskog, feels like they're the two. That Dirt Mile feels like Cold Front and Monongahela. They're your principals. But there's three pick fours from race five on. There's 5, 6, 7, 8. Then there's 8, 9, 10, 11, which is the big open company stakes. And then there's 10, 11, 12, 13. And frankly, the late double is eye-crossing. I mean, an allowance of 6.5 furlong, second level allowance that's got 11 horses after the Derby. Good luck. I mean, Midnight Charlie, the price-wise, there's some crazy lines. I thought Midnight Charlie, 8-1 was going to be the clear horse to beat, and I printed the PPs without morning lines and was then surprised to pull up the quick sheet on DRF with all the odds and see that Midnight Charlie was 8-1. There's no way he's going off 8-1. And then there's a 7 furlong maiden special that closes out the card. Yeesh. So late double, very, very tough. And even if you were narrow in the Cotillion and the Pennsylvania Derby, and the Pennsylvania Derby, the more you look, I can't wait to hear what Haskins got to say. And we'll talk to Rich Yang. We'll talk to Tony. I said yesterday, Mr. Money, War of Will, and Improbable, obviously, the three heavyweights with the absence now of Maximum Security recovering from colic and displacing. And the closer I looked, Spun to Run is a serious horse, and he is right in line now. I mean, they obviously he's got to face these types of horses one more time. The Haskell, the Haskell was the Haskell. We say this all the time. The three-year-olds that come to hand in the middle part of the year, they're always discounted because we're so familiar with the Triple Crown season horses. And the first person that identified this in my memory was Davidowitz in Betting Thoroughbreds. There's a section late in the book about betting opportunities, and that always stuck with me the first time I read Betting Thoroughbreds, that we're so familiar with all the faces and names, the War of Wills and the Improbables, etc. And Mr. Money, just a slight degree, but there's a lot of people who feel that this is the big coming out party, that Mr. Money is money in the bank. Obviously it would have been that much more intriguing and fun and exciting with Maximum Security. But the five principles after this: Math Wizard, Improbable, War of Will, Spun to Run, Mr. Money. That's a nice quintet. Shanghai Superfly, I just hope he breaks clean, doesn't bounce off anybody, and just drops out. I don't think he would beat the 50-1 shot in the Cotillion. But I don't know. It's a very strange. I don't understand. I know it's hard to say to one of your rank and file horsemen, please tell your owner, thanks but no thanks. We're going to refuse entry. But it's a tricky equation, because there have been moments where somebody said, my horse is doing great, really, is it really necessary to have this horse in the middle of everything and the filly in the Cotillion? I mean, the Cotillion was wonderful and intriguing without, didn't need an 11th horse. So anyway, it is a dynamite card. The maiden races, I think I found a fun maiden in the grass race in the third, that I know I'm going to want to bet. We'll talk about tomorrow when we're handicapping. Three maiden races start the card, three maiden specials, two on the dirt, one on the turf, and then a starter allowance, and then all the stakes, and that late pick, that late double of a second level allowance and a maiden special weight. So compare this to Pennsylvania Derby Day cards in the past, and you'll see this is probably the best one that has been fashioned. In addition, got to be impressed with the card they put together at Laurel. And at Laurel, this has been, there's an agglomeration of to some degree of several cards and several late season Maryland institutions like the Salima and the Laurel Futurity. I don't know if Tony won a Laurel Futurity, but he definitely won a Salima when it was a grade one. Candy Eclair. That Bald Eagle Derby, which is new, mile and a half on the grass. the Baltimore Washington International, better known as the DC International, now a mile. We'll see what Pat McBurney wants to do, because he's got Golden Brown entered in a couple of different spots. He's entered at Philly as well in that dirt mile. The DeFrancis Dash, the grade three these days, and this came up with a lot of the a lot of the usual suspects we've been seeing on the sprint scene throughout the summer, including the New York hard hitters like Killy Beg's captain and Bon Raison. He hate me, Stan Huff, the Sagamore Algorithms gelding, who's really had a nice year, has been very carefully handled, just missed to Bon Raison in the tail of the cat at Saratoga. New York Central coming out of the Nehrud, but before that had won the Maryland Sprint, of course. Steve Asmussen, the Windstar China Horse Club SF Racing Group. SF actually bred, you might forget that, bred New York Central. And of course, second last year in the Pat Day Mile, and then was gone for 7 months, and you know, put the nice, you know, spring, late winter, spring campaign together with that Maryland Sprint victory. Fergal Lynch gets the call on him in here with Santana in Kentucky. So, or is he in Kentucky, or is he's in Kentucky? So, Wonderful Light for Samantha Siegel, who's really had Samantha's had a very good, consistent year, and has been active at the sale. We'll talk about the sale in a second. The Laurel Dash, it is crazy. I mean, it's just another deep card. You've also got the Sensible Lady Turf Dash. You can't run stakes cards in Maryland without turf sprints, and the Weather Vane. Which, new to me, the Weather Vane. Remember years ago there was the seafood joint in Saratoga? The Weather Vane? Then they knocked it down. They built that hotel out there over by the now defunct driving range. You know, I've noticed of late, it's like driving ranges are like a thing of the past, huh? They just don't. I've seen a few that just seem like they've been abandoned. In addition, you got the Dogwood Saturday at Churchill, Covfefe, getting ready for the Breeders' Cup. It's actually it's a listed stake, and yet it really drew nicely, because you've got, in addition to Covfefe, you got Istan Council and Champagne Anyone. Calhoun sends Free Cover. Neil Pessin with Bell's the One. And Ben Colbert, Take Charge Angel. So nice little six pack, kind of a quiet. After last week, kind of a middling, quiet Saturday at Churchill. Oh, you've also got the one race that I forgot all about that I've got to pull up. What about the Oaks? What about the Charlestown Oaks, which frequently can be worth noting? Let's take a look. The Grade Three. We'll explore it together, because I actually admit that I kind of had forgot about it. Not intentionally, but it happens. I've been focused on the Philly trip, and for goodness sakes, where is it? There it is. Bada boom. Charlestown Oaks. Here we go. Rudy Brissett, La Chancla. First stakes drive for the L&J Foxwoods Uncle Mo. That was $750,000. Plus an extra $25,000 for good measure. Jose Ortiz. Joel Rosario on Irish Mischief. Back to into Stakes Company for Brad Cox. And this was the horse that Marshall mentioned, one of the ones, Irish Mischief, that he 10 strike has got Mike Pietrangelo involved with. You've got Parisian Diva, local, Stacy Vance. Lovesick, David Fox coming up out of the Azalea. Newly minted, Linda Rice, of course. Nice win in the Fleet Indian. Lady TNT for Joe Sharp, for the Dilworths. Fashion Faux Pas. Delacour and company. Taylor's Spirit, Scott Gaynor. South of France, Todd Pletcher. Scat Rattle and Roll, Kelly Rubley. Nice field. Good deal. Grade three. Let's take a break. Come right back. Start to dig in on this Thursday at the races.
The latest racing news. It's at the races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years. We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and Kent DeSarmo on Afternoon Delights, absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Let's be savage.
We're back at the races, 20 minutes into hour one on this Thursday, and I wasn't going to let the week go after a Grade 1 win. We're certainly going to get Ed Keneally in here, and he joins us now. He's had a busy week at Keeneland as well, buying some horses and working with his clients, and might still be doing that. I hear a little clip-clop in the background. Eddie, good morning.
Steve, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Forget about me. You're like Sherman's march to the sea. You're taking no prisoners.
You know this game is up and down.
Well, all right, you're up. You're up, and you keep going up. Good job on Sunday. Talk about the win at Woodbine and Abscond. That was terrific.
Yeah, she's done really well in a short period of time. Broke our maiden first time out at Ellis, sprinting on the grass, and then we ran her offshore dressed in a stake at Saratoga sprinting, and she was second, ran really well against a very, very good horse, and stretched her out to a mile, one-turn mile the other day, and three of them hit the wire together, and fortunately we got the head bob.
That was as exciting. I put the video up, Eddie, on Sunday afternoon, because that was as exciting a race as anybody's going to see all year, because any of the three could have won. And, you know, by some degree, you know, Irad and the filly were, you know, were in the tightest, you know, part of the scrum. It's always easier to be outside. And I thought she showed a lot of tenacity and maturity to, you know, to between horses and to persevere.
Yes, no doubt about that. That's one thing about her. She wasn't the biggest of the three fillies in that line across the track, but she definitely has plenty of heart, and she really gave it all. She tried hard. She had a hard race. But she came out of it good. She's a little tired, obviously, but she's gutsy.
You know, when you stretch out, you've got the unique. You know, this was a mile, and of course, the unique thing about going up to Woodbine is you've got that one turn mile, and so you know, at least in terms of development curve, you're still going around one turn. You're not asking the filly to do anything except run an extra 300 yards.
Well, that is true. It's a nice progression of distance without going two turns yet, and it's a good way to set one up maybe for their next race, which would be for the most part, for a lot of them, would be a two turn mile or mile and 16th.
Exactly. And you know, since we're at that point, I think where this filly was purchased at Keeneland, she was a $90,000 buy last year, and she's by Blame. She's out of a Grand Slam mare. Michael Now, Bredder, Apogee Bloodstock, and Mike Anderson own. You know, talk about the acquisition of this filly.
Yeah, Apogee is a group that I put together with Christian Hayes, and we buy three or four yearlings every year to resell at the two-year-old in training sale. And there's 10 of us involved, myself included. And she was part of a package to be resold with Eddie Woods at the two-year-old in training sale. And she went to the sale in Timonium and didn't work quick enough on the dirt that day to warrant anyone paying a big number for her. So we ended up not selling her and opted to race her on the grass.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
So it worked out.
Well, you know, and it's funny because out of curiosity, this is a horse that had potentially, had she been, let's say, at OBS working on the synthetic, maybe she would have been a little bit better on the, you know, on the synthetic, and maybe she would have gotten some attention, and that she was really never a dirt filly at any point.
Well, that could have happened, but you know, it just he decided to get together with us and talk about what sale to put her in, and we thought she needed a little more time before to where she'd be ready, and we thought the May sale would be fine in Timonium, but for whatever reason she just didn't handle that track, and thankfully she came out of it okay, and we still have her.
Unbelievable. And now she's a grade one winner. And the thing that's amazing, I'm just looking now at her auction history. She RNA'd for $30,000. Was that the reserve?
Yeah, we were in that ballpark. Yeah, so she could have been purchased. She could have been purchased above that. But we needed, we weren't going to give her away. So we thought that was fair. If we didn't get 30, we were going to racer. And wow. Yeah, she just worked. She just didn't work slow, basically, on the dirt that day. And the rest is history, I suppose.
The rest is history is right, and now you've got yourself a Grade One winning Blame Filly. And it's not like the pedigree. This is a nice pedigree, too. I mean,
yeah. Blame is solid. His fillies are very solid, and his filly's got a solid female page as well. So, I mean, she's created quite a bit of residual value now. So,
good for you.
At least she's got that guaranteed to her if she ever goes through an auction going forward, she's gone into a different price range now after the Grade One win, that's for sure.
Exactly. That damn Proctor train, Solitary.
Correct.
Life. Yeah. Talk about going forward, about Breeders' Cup.
Yeah, I mean, she continues to do well. We'll definitely take a shot. That's a two-turn race, so it's a little bit different setup, but she's got tactical speed. She broke sharp from the gate the other day. She always breaks sharp. So tight turns, but I think she should adapt nicely to the two-turn racing.
What do you do, Eddie, preparing in terms of building some stamina with her? Do you change anything about her training between now and Santa Anita?
Nothing. Change nothing, if possible. That would be the goal, anyway. It would be to change nothing. And just proceed as we have done.
You know, it's also impressive. You look at the record now. She debuted at Ellis. You brought her to Saratoga. Then you bring her through, you know, the border and through, you know, the ship up to Woodbine. Three different racetracks, and you know, now you're going to put her on the plane. You get the sense that she's a filly that is handling just everything you throw at her.
She's got a good mind, good constitution. She's pretty even keeled filly. She doesn't get rattled or upset by much. So she does have the right kind of mind for what she's doing, and that's part of the reason she's successful at it.
Well, and you imagine, you know, you expect that you're going to get firm turf, and she's handled, you know, three different turf courses, so why wouldn't she handle the oval at Santa Anita?
Oh, I would think she'd have no problem with it.
Well, you win a Grade One anytime. Always feel good. Let's also fold in running second in the Iroquois, and this came on Saturday, of course, at Churchill. And Dennis's moment is the 800-pound gorilla right now. But you've got Scabbard, the renamed 2-year-old, and you have to be very pleased with that effort.
Oh yeah, Scabbard ran huge. He was beaten a length in 3/4 by who was probably the Breeders' Cup favorite right now. Dennis's moment, our horse. Didn't have a perfect trip. He had to tap on the brakes at the half-mile pole because he ran up on some heels of some tiring horses and had to stop briefly and lose some momentum. But he didn't quit. He kept running, and he passed several horses, and he was gaining coming down to the wire. Obviously, the winner last won with a little bit less in hand. But, we were happy with our effort. That horse had been second and the Grade Two Saratoga Special in his previous race. So he's run some three good races back-to-back.
Exactly. And this, of course, the debut going two turns. And it sets him up, I imagine. Certainly, Mr. Sutton and you aren't going to bypass a chance to go up against Dennis again at Santa Anita.
Yeah, he Scabbard obviously relished the distance and was full of run at the wire here in the mile of 16th race at Churchill at the Iroquois on Saturday. So distance won't be a problem for him. And I think under a different setup and a better trip and racing luck, I think he fits.
Well, this is a homebred of Joe Sutton's. And I know that Joe's, what, he's bought, I think I saw maybe four hips so far, Keeneland?
He's three so far, yeah.
Three.
Yeah. So we've been busy buying some yearlings, and hopefully some of them will pan out. You never know. But I think we got some nice young horses, for sure. It's a sale this past week.
Well, and you here's another one. Now, this is one that you trained, that cowgirl Mally.
Correct.
I don't remember her much. What kind of horse was she?
Well, she's a dam of Scabbard, and she, like Scabbard, won a maiden race at Churchill Downs in June, first time out, and we ran her in the Schuylerville at Saratoga in her second out, and she was third, and she had a short career. She had a few different little issues, but she had talent.
And she's been producing. Has she gotten anything before this horse, production wise?
Yeah, there's a full brother to Scabbard that I have, a horse called Chaps, who's won a couple of races.
Okay.
He's not shown to be a stake horse just yet, but he's a hard knocking allowance horse.
Well, pretty exciting to come out of the weekend, Eddie, with two Breeders' Cup contenders, and having 2 year olds like this makes the fall a lot of fun.
Absolutely. We've got some exciting young horses to look forward to. Of course, we have By Your Side as well, the horse that won the Sanford at Saratoga, and he worked yesterday, and he worked unbelievably well. So we could have a good fall with him also.
What's next for him?
He'll run in the Breeders' Futurity on the 5th of October at Keeneland.
So you could, by all rights, both of them could end up Breeders' Cup.
Yeah, it's possible. It's possible. Obviously, By Your Side will have to run a big race. But I think he likes Keeneland. He did a lot of his training earlier in the year at Keeneland, and he likes that track. So I'm excited to run him on that track.
Well, By Your Side, coming out of the hopeful, and you had a very productive. You won at least two, right? You won two on the same day. I watched that day at Kentucky Downs.
Kentucky Downs was good, yeah. The horses ran really well over there, and of course the purses are very, very good at Kentucky Downs. So, it's a short meet, but we didn't run a lot of horses. It's hard to get in because the races tend to overfill, but the horses we ran quite well.
A couple of other notes, and you won some assorted type races at Kentucky Downs, but there was an Ellis maiden winner. An older horse, a three-year-old, a filly by Noble Mission, Amazima. What's next for her?
She'll probably run next weekend in an allowance at Churchill. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. She'll run in a one other than next weekend. But, she's an improving filly for sure.
Well, a lot of good things happening. One of the winners at Kentucky Downs as well, that Joy of Treasure, knocking on the door for a stakes try?
Probably run an allowance race at Keeneland the second week of the meet and go from there. The purses are good. And she may end up running in some stakes races later on. We'll see.
Like the Cardinal, right? The end of the season kind of?
It's a possible. She'll have to win at Keeneland to warrant a look at that race, but she's doing well, so we'll see. She also worked yesterday.
Well, you're killing it left and right. Eddie, I may have to call you next week. Talk a little bit about Jay's Solitude going into the weekend in that Bald Eagle Derby at Laurel.
Yeah, second by a nose last time in the Virginia Derby at Colonial Downs, and was a little bit unlucky. He was rolling at the wire, which just didn't get there on time. So this is at a distance. It's a mile and a half, the race on Saturday at Laurel. And none of them have gone that far yet, but I think this one should have no problem with the at a distance.
Well, and he's an Affleet Alex out of a Notebook mare, and this is Mike Anderson, who's partnered up on the filly.
Correct.
Eddie, doing great. How much more shopping do you have to do? You're digging around Book 5 today?
We're kind of winding it up now. We're at Churchill the next couple of days. We've got some horses to run and such. So I think we're kind of done at Keeneland. We got quite a few bought, and we were happy with what we got. So, yeah, no problem.
Well, Eddie Keneally, folks, you can go to him and you can bring a $30,000 RNA, and he'll turn her into a Grade One winner.
Thanks, Steve. That's very nice.
So easy. Right? That's you make it look easy, Eddie. That's the best part. I love it.
Appreciate it.
Always great. Eddie Keneally, and it's a big fall, really, already. A big late summer and fall. Second half of the year, just Eddie's been killing it. We just keep bringing his name up. Let's take a break here. We'll come back. We'll check in with Dick Powell. Dick's getting on a plane to go somewhere. We'll find out where. He is going to go over the Hong Kong week and look ahead to the weekend. And I also want to talk to Dick about this climbing the Everest, the race, the sprint race. I got drafted into the fundraising effort. This is the second year that they've done this, the Climbing the Everest, where you know, variety of you know, racing pundits and broadcasters and writers and whatever are assigned a horse, and we're each involved with a charity. So if the horse that they assign us wins, a $5,000 charity donation goes their way. So I was delighted to be asked, and I think I actually was assigned a pretty live horse coming into the Everest. It's about 3 weeks away, and you know, you saw a lot of this last year on racing media leading up to the race. So I'm going to ask Dick about it. See what he, you know, see what his thoughts are. I've got Santa Ana Lane, who's a veteran gelding, a 7-year-old gelding, a hard hitter, been around and is highly rated down under. So, and I'm doing this for the racetrack chaplaincy, is my charity. Can explain that as well. Let's take a break. Dick Powell next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Amazing achievements for Pennsylvania breeds on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions 3 straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our racehorse development fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
HorseBills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through HorseBills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the HorseBills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. HorseBills.com. Toll-free number 888-9000. 938-4643.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races. Kasabian makes every day better. So does Dick Powell. Dick joins us. He's headed to the airport. He's flying somewhere. Where are you going? I'm very nosy today. Where are you going?
I know. Unfortunately, I'm going to the funeral, so.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Out of town. I'm sorry.
That stuff.
Not a good situation, but got to be there. So.
I hear you. I understand. I understand. Yeah. We all get those. Well, I want to do a couple of things with you today, and we have got to look at HKJC. But I do want to ask you, if you heard me wrapping up with Eddie and talking about your visit, I got drafted into this Climbing the Everest, which essentially is it's a bit of a publicity campaign. But I was happy to do it because it provides a chance to win a $5,000 donation for a charity of everybody's choice. And how much do you know about this, this event, second year, as far as I know?
Not really very much, other than I'm familiar with the Everest and what a big success that's been. But no. So you have Santa Ana Lane?
I do.
He's good.
Yeah? He's all right, huh?
Is Redville back? Redville, I think, won the first two runnings of the race. Not sure if he's coming back or not.
Yeah, I would just give. They just will getting, you know.
They will certainly have a full gate. And the amazing thing with the Everest is it was not an original idea. The Pegasus was more of an original idea than the Everest. But the Everest did it right. The Pegasus has never figured that out. But here you are, Australia. You're going to ask owners to put up all this money and run for gigantic purse. And the distance is 6 furlongs. So, yeah, there's no shortage of horses both there and around the world. I believe Aidan O'Brien might be sending someone this year. Stronach decided to go mile and an eighth on a track that's just horrible for mile and eighth if you draw outside and stuff like that. And just, this was perfect. And they have an overflow entry field that they'll run 14 or 16. But then they'll have horses that are also eligibles, and the actual structure has worked where people do buy slots and sell them or partner and stuff like that. So it's been a big success down under. And even though we're heading towards fall and winter, they're heading towards spring, and spring means the Everest and the Melbourne Carnival and Cockstrade and Mooney Valley. So the races all come bunched. They're like, all of a sudden they're here. And the Everest has done pretty well in that landscape.
Well, they run it at Randwick, and it's October 19th, which really that is sort of the right when that whole sequence of events, the Cox Plate and everything, that we hear, so often. We're looking forward to it. An opportunity to win a $5,000 donation. And I mentioned, you have to pick a beneficiary. And I struggled with this slightly because I at first thought, well, we should really do an equine retraining and retirement. But then I thought, if I do that, I'm playing, I don't want to play favorites because we support all of them. So I went in a different direction, and it occurred to me that the racetrack chaplaincy would be ideal. And, the chaplaincy does just an unbelievable job under, without anybody really, I think, noticing too much. And, in fact, while we're on this topic, I do want to mention that the White Horse Awards, end of the month here, I think on Saturday, the 28th, is the closing of the nominations for the White Horse Awards that will be given out Breeders' Cup week by the chaplaincy. They do an unbelievable job, and they help the children of the backstretch. They help virtually everybody on the backstretch in so many different ways. So I selected the Racetrack Chaplaincy of America as my charity. And we'll see. We hope. Love to be able to have them hit for for 5K. Let's turn around, see who hit for something over the weekend at Shot 10. And, Dick, what how did things turn out Sunday morning?
Okay, well, yesterday's Happy Valley meet was canceled because of
right.
the danger of the protesters. Can't say no more, danger of the protesters. So that meet was abandoned. But Shot 10 ran last Sunday. We had 2 on the old weather, 8 on the turf, 5 favorites won. So that was a little bit unusual, and 5 got the money. Couple of bombs, $66, $60. And Zach Purton won 4 races, so he's tied with Joe Moreira, who only had 1 winner, for the lead for the season for 8. And just a couple gate-to-wire winners. I noticed the all-weather track had a gate-to-wire winner in race 2. Then they kind of all spread out. But the speed seemed to do well. In fact, I sent out a notice yesterday how they're doing something to the turf course. And they basically, it almost sounds like how you would maintain a golf course, but it's trying to soften the course up because they had complaints from horsemen that the track was too hard. So you watch the races at Shot 10, and they go pretty good. I mean, number one, big fields means someone has to go, and you're not going to set a slow pace with all that pressure on your behind. And number two, the course is firm. Unless they get some rain event, it's going to be firm every night. So it's not just not as usual to see 7 furlongs and 21 and 6 and 8 and change and stuff like that. So they did something to try to soften it a little bit. But it was a good meet of 10 races the other night. And what I did, Steve, Saturday evening before I went to bed, and getting to bed gets earlier and earlier these days. There's been a complaint about not having a morning line, which I understand. Even though everyone who looks at the morning line complains about who makes the morning line. They all want it, but then they get it. It's like, wait a minute.
It's no good. I like this. It's a bad line.
Exactly. So in Hong Kong, what's great is Saturday before I went to bed, I made some bets because I bet the horses that we had talked about last Thursday. So I went online and went to HKJC, and instead of clicking on race form, I clicked on current odds. So you get the up-to-the-moment odds of every horse in every race, the win-in-place odds of all the horses. And there was decent money in the pools. This was a couple hours before, at least 3 hours before post time. And there was $700,000 U.S. dollars in the pool. So that gives you an idea. So I knew the first race that we had talked about that the horse looked like a stick out because it was kind of a tightly grouped. Just there wasn't a widespread of weights in your typical Hong Kong handicap race. So Crown Adventure won it, and he won it by a nose. He got up just in time at 2-1, which is $4. And then the next race, we did okay with the Quinella. And then the third race, I made a win bet on Alfred Chan, who we've been touting as 10-pound. I don't even know if it's called an apprentice rider allowance. They do call it apprentice, but there is a local jockey allowance that the riders get. And Chan's getting 10 pounds. And I was doing some research on Chan, and he has won over 100 races. He raced in New Zealand. He raced in Australia. I mean, he comes into Hong Kong with a big background. So he's not the typical guy who just won his first race ever. No, he's had over 100 wins. So now you see him getting 10 pounds off, and these are all handicap races, so 10 pounds really significant. So he won race 3, page 660. But I knew those odds approximately before I made the bets and went to bed. So in lieu of not having a morning line, you have on the website, just go to race form, and then right next to it, it'll say current odds. And it's just perfect to look ahead. Now, right now, there's no odds up for Saturday's racing because this week is Shot 10 West Saturday, not Sunday. But I think that's a great feature that you just have access to the pools. And that's true in Australia. When I've been to the Melbourne Cup, and the other big races there on Saturday. I was able to just go online and tap core and go through who's taking money and where the money's going and stuff like that. They also have some graphics in there that shows you horses that are moving in price and stuff like that, market movers, as they call them in Australia. So I think that's a great feature. The morning line's great. I'm not going to knock the morning line. I'm not going to knock the people that do the morning line, but this is every bit as good, if not better, because you're only making your bets near post time, and now you have the ability way before the odds are displayed for the race to see where the money's going. So I was able to do that Saturday night for Sunday morning's racing, and it worked out okay. A couple other things I wanted to cover. Yeah, both all weather races went to the favorites. One paid $4, one paid $3.20. So I'm not sure if that's a trend or something to watch, but we'll keep an eye on that. That Chatin, who has all weather race in Happy Valley, does not have all weather race. And Happy Valley scheduled the race again this coming Wednesday, so we'll see how that works out with the unrest over there, especially on the island. Chatin's not necessarily affected. But the island where Happy Valley Racecourse is definitely has been. So that was basically Sunday's wrap-up. Saturday, I keep wanting to say Sunday, and I keep catching myself. We have a 10-race card, and 3 are on the all-weather, 7 are on the turf. Hopefully the weather will be nice, and the turf will be at least predictably calm. And the opener, when you're looking at handicap racing, and this is why I preach using the form guide. And also in the form guide, they have this nice synopsis in the beginning where it lists all the horses, and they're all listed by their ratings. So you see very quickly these are the highest rated horses at the top and the lowest rated horses at the bottom. For race number 1 Saturday, the one horse, Coro Rapido, looks not unbeatable, but he gets out for chance. So he gets 123 pounds, which would make him like the 8th rated horse in the race instead of the highest rated horse. So there's a 20 pound spread in the weights from top to bottom. Now the other day we talked about that race that only had a 9 pound spread. Well, this is a 0-40 class 5 handicap. These are bottom level horses. So the favorite's going to carry, or at least the one horse is going to carry 133, and it drops all the way down to 113, and not just one horse, but a couple of horses are weighted that low. So there's a big difference in talent here. Coro Rapido is rated at 40, so he's just under the threshold to get into this race. If he runs well, he's going to have to move up to 40 to 60. So my guess is they're not going to hold anything back. They're going to go for it. I think going with chance is an indication that they're going to win this race, and then they'll move up to 40 to 60 and start out probably a little bit lower and get some weight off. But for now, at 123, Chan just looks perfect in the opener. I think he's going to be favored. The current odds aren't up yet, but I think Coro Rapido will be favored in race number 1 and race number 2. I went to number 7, Victory Power. It's breaking from post 14, but this is a straightaway 5 furlong turf sprint. They start way down at the bottom of the course and then just power up to the finish line, so there's no turns in this race. So 14, you know, I don't like the extreme post, but Zach Purton is aboard for Doug White. Doug's off to a good start with his training. He has 3 wins from 15 starters, so I think Victory Power could be tough here. His recent starts have been good, and we're also already getting horses running back. Victory Power ran last week, and he was blocked in the stretch. He was beaten 2 3/4 lengths. He went off the favorite, 3-2 favorite, so he's back, and he'll be very tough in this spot. It's basically he's back in against the same kind of horses, so looking for a Quinale, you might want to throw in the 7 quadruple double. Matthew Kuhn, remember him from last year? He had all those long shots as the meet finished up last year. People finished up last year. Well, he's 0-14 so far this year, but He's dangerous, and horse has a lot of form and a lot of speed, so we'll see if we can get in 7-8 Quinella in race number two. And then the feature race, at least the highest price purse race, is going to be race number seven. This is a handicap going 1,600 meters a mile on the turf. What was interesting with this one is these are horses from 80 to 100. And number one, Harmony Victory, is rated at 100. The next rated horse drops down to 90. But we don't see that very often in handicap races. Usually they're you know, a couple of pounds each. Well, now we're going from 133 to 123, but the horse is weighted at 133 pounds. He's much the best in here. And he's been running against Betty. He's been running 90 to 115. And these races are fun, Steve, because we see it in Dubai. We'll see a 95 to 110 or 100-plus. Well, 100-plus brings in a lot of group-type horses. So these are just under that level, but the one horse could be above it with his recent form. So he squeezes in at 100, and even though he has to carry 133 pounds, I think he's the stick-out in this race. So he draws post five right in the middle, going a mile. Grant Van Niekerk rides for Danny Shum. Shum's tied for leading trainer with Tony Cruz. And I think he will be very tough. As far as the Quinella, the nine-horse star performance only shows one running line, and that was last July. But he has form in New Zealand. Now, how would I know that? Well, if I go farther back into the form guide, it gives me my overseas form of all the runners that are in today listed in alphabetical order. So I look up star performance. I see he raced in New Zealand. He's only a four-year-old, so he's improving four-year-old. And his last star was a group two going a mile. He's only beaten 2.5 lengths. So that's pretty good form coming in here. Tony Cruz is going to add the hood and to show you the difference between their racing and everybody else's racing. There's a press release sent out today about the addition of the hood. Now, Cruz had to not only go before the stewards as well as Barrera to describe how much better he's been in training, how he gets hot before coming out on the track for training, and the hood has really helped him. But then he had to have a barrier trial, or at least a breeze, with the stewards watching. And then they approved using the hood for racing. So that looks like a big factor in getting this horse to be calm. But he does have some backlash, and it's kind of sneaky backlash. So we do like the one Harmony Victory. Very tough, even though he's conceding weight. And then we'll throw in number nine, who gets in with 115 pounds, which we also like, and Joe Barrera. And if any of that form from New Zealand follows through, he could be part of the Quinella. So if you're going to play Quinella 1-9 in race number seven. So when I do these picks, I'm obviously giving out picks, but I'm also trying to find storylines and teachable moments as far as handicapping the races, using the form guide, taking advantage of all the information that's available to you.
Well, I've been sending out links to the form guide, and it takes a big effort to comb through everything, and an amazing 50 pages every week, looking at the weekend card, and there's so much to digest, but it's worth diving in. And even though with the five favorites this past Saturday, still there's prices to be had. So dig in and take your shots. And Dick, I appreciate it. We'll catch up next week.
Okay, see you. Thanks.
Dick Powell, everybody, and HKJC, HKJC Racing on Twitter and hkjc.com as well. And I'll send you this week's guide again. They've got a pace projector. You can't believe. I mean, every time I go to look at it, there's something. It's kind of a rabbit hole scenario. once a week if you focus on Chatin. We'll see about next week. That situation yesterday, it's funny because at the beginning of the season, I asked Dick. I said, "How much concern is there over the protests, and what potential it had for disruption?" So here was your answer yesterday. Let's take a top of the hour timeout. It's exactly 10 o'clock. Here in the East. We come back, Tony Black, and we'll be looking forward to seeing Tony on Saturday at Parks. He and Kylie. Kylie's always too busy. She just waves to us as she's running around doing stuff. But Tony's not busy. Tony's like the unofficial mayor of the clubhouse on Pennsylvania Derby Day. He's always got he's always meeting and greeting and slapping backs, kissing babies. Tony Black joins us next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sportsform Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sportsform delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the summer on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
You've got an open heart, so you share what's inside, thinking that all is said in confidence, but then you realize.
Back 5 minutes into hour two on this Thursday, and it's a tradition like no other. Tony Black with the pre-Pennsylvania Derby Cotillion Day visit, and this is a big weekend because there's basically every race in the Mid-Atlantic, every stake. Tony has won, it seems, when you look around between the PA Derby and the Cotillion and the Salima, the Laurel Futurity. I mean, every race this weekend, Tony, you've got a picture of probably down in the basement.
Well, you bring some good things to my attention. Until a few years ago, until you brought it to my attention that I'd won the Cotillion, I didn't even remember I won the Cotillion on Frank Whiteley's horse, Suede Shoes. But, yeah, I was fortunate enough to win some of the nice races, the Salima and Candy Eclair. I had a broken hand, rode her anyway. Miss Paxson just thought I had a dislocated thumb, and she won. But what a big day of racing at Parks this weekend. You know, the $1 million Cotillion, when I won it, it was $50,000. The $1 million Pennsylvania Derby, when I rode in it before, one year it was $300,000. The year I won it, it was $200,000. But a lot of memories. And I was just looking, they have a stake called the Gallant Bob Stake. Well, I wasn't a regular rider of Gallant Bob, but I did ride him his last win before they retired him, when J.D. Marquette retired him. You look at these races and the names of these races, and it just brings back a flood of memories.
Well, I talked at the beginning of the show, Tony, I handicapped the card, including those maiden races and the late double. There's a second level allowance going 6.5 after the Derby, and then there's a maiden special afterward. All you have to do to see the progression of this day, and you know, we've said it many times, management made a very clever maneuver when they switched this race up from Labor Day weekend to this date on the calendar, because it is positioned really well for, you know, the way in which outfits are racing their horses. I mean, in terms of post Travers and pre Breeders' Cup, it just fits beautifully. And the mile and the eighth, obviously, you know, makes a lot of sense. You know, top to bottom, when you look at this card, it's just outstanding. I mean, you know, I've looked at, you go back a few years, and there would be cheaper races, you know, early in the day, but that's evaporated. I mean, this is a serious series of races, starting with those maiden specials at the front end.
Yeah, I mean, you really said it all, Steve. It really is a tremendous card. It stands out, and every year it's gotten better, and this is probably one of the best cards I've ever seen them put together. And you know what? When they did move this race, it was on the advice, the Pennsylvania Derby, it was on the advice of Sal Sinatra, who was racing secretary and director of racing at the time. So my hat's off to him. I give him a lot of credit for that. And it's utilized as a Breeders' Cup prep race. It's just every smart move that could have been made was made with that, with the Derby. And then we come up with cards like this. I mean, quality horses, quality races. You know? What else can you ask for? I'm going to be over there. I hope you're over there. I hope Haskins over there. And I hope everybody has an enjoyable day. I know I'm going to be over there with even Jockeys and Jeans. The originator of Jockeys and Jeans, Barry Pearl's going to be there. And there's so many interesting people and so much excitement that's churned up on this day because of not just the card, but especially because of the Cotillion and the Pennsylvania Derby. You got to love racing when you see horses all come together like this.
Well, and it's too bad that, obviously, that we lose... We lose the favorite when it comes to Maximum Security. However, I don't know how much of a chance you've had, Tony, to look at this group, but this is still a very compelling race, as is, you know, the Cotillion with a group of 11. I will ask you the question, because you and I kind of bounced it around a little bit off air. The inclusion of horses that just do not belong, and the structure of the conditions call for a $10,000 supplement if you aren't nominate, you know, if you don't nominate early, and 2,000 to enter, 3,000 to start. So that's 15,000. But every starter gets 15,000 in these two races. I don't understand the necessity of, and it is at the racing secretary's discretion, to refuse an entry. I mean, why do you want, and have you ever been asked to ride, 50-to-1 shots in races of this caliber?
Yeah, and, you know, in early parts of someone's career as a jockey, you get asked to do that, and you can't say no. In the later stages of his career where, you know, you... you don't have to be as subservient to a trainer, you know. You can say no, you know. But you're absolutely right. When you run a horse that doesn't belong in the race, you know, it is to some extent, you know, a maiden against winners or a 50-to-1 shot against, you know, quality horses or horses that have proven that they can run at this level. In my eyes, it's an embarrassment to the horse, the owner. And as a jockey, you know, you're going to go out there and, you know, surprising things have happened, but not regularly in this business. But you're going to go out there and you're going to try for the most part. And then when the horse caves in and he's over, I only can hope, you know, you would use good judgment as a rider, as I did at times in the past. And you got him to the wire safely in good order. You know, you throw it aside. Well, I have to hit him because I want this man to know I'm trying. When they quit trying underneath you, it becomes abuse when you hit horses that are done. And I just hope that any jock that's put in this position would use good judgment. And in this day and age, you've got to show good judgment because everybody is under a microscope. Anything negative happens, it gets, you know, telegraphed all over the country, or, you know, and it gets shown to the public in a way that demeans the true meaning of what the sport is all about. So, you know, I just hope jockeys use good judgment. Yeah, and then sometimes owners will say, well, you know, we only get one chance to run in this kind of a race at our hometown, so we're running in it. You know, I guess that's the mentality that some owners may have or some trainer may have. But we're going to only get one chance. It's a one-chance deal. You know, even, the horse we're speaking of in the Derby, you know, that really doesn't belong in there. You'd almost would have hoped that racing secretary or management could have refused entry or whatever.
They have that condition. It's right. It's right in the conditions.
But I guess when you come to a place where a trainer is based there, and I'm sure racing secretaries get put in a position, well, you've asked me to run horse in a race to help you close entries. Now you're not going to take my entry. I mean, it's a sticky situation, but really, people should use good judgment. In another case, you know, even in the cotillion, when you have a horse that you enter, it's going to be a big price. And, you know, when we talk about a horse that's only won a couple races, like Collegeville Girl, it's an ambitiously entered. You know, a horse that's not seasoned to go long, but we're going to run them long, even though she does show the ability to go long. But is she ready to go long at this level? You know, it's asking a lot of her. I believe she's going to, you know, you can only hope that she puts in a respectable performance. But we're asking a lot just to ask for a respectable performance. A fourth or fifth place finish beaten less than 10 lengths is a respectable performance. Can she do that? I don't know. You know, I hope for her best because she's such a nice filly, mentality-wise, physically nice. But it's him. You know, you have to be realistic. That's ambitiously entering a horse when you enter in a race like this.
Yeah.
And the mentality is, well, you know what? There's only $1 million cotillion a year, and you're only a three-year-old once out of the year. You know, to run in it, I guess that's the mindset that is.
Well, I get it. Collegeville's 20-to-1, and you know, you put that in good perspective, actually, because it's clear she's doing very well, and
right.
given the trouble that she's, you know, some of the issues that she's dealt with, you really put it right, because she could run her best career race and be fourth in here. So it is tough, and it's also, you know, knowing what lies ahead in New York with couple of state bred days coming. That also, there's a bunch of New York breds actually that are dotting this card, and also Collegeville sister, that Mrs. Phelps, comes back in the first, and we'll see if she can't right the ship a little bit. Have you been getting on both of them? No.
Yeah, I get on both of them. I haven't been on Collegeville the last couple of days because Angel's been getting on her, Castillo. They wanted him to become as familiar as possible as he could with the horse, and she's been going so good for him. And, you know, he's a good, heady old rider. Not as old as me, but a good, heady.
Nobody's as old as you.
No, he's experienced. I shouldn't use the word old, because he doesn't even look old. He's an experienced rider with a lot of talent, and I'm sure he'll make the right decisions when riding her. You know, and she is very talented. Like I said, I wish that we would add her in a race like this and brought her along with the seasoning to go long. But she will go long, and she is a nice filly, and there's definitely, you know, a lot there to be thinking about in the future. So we'll see what happens. I'm rooting for her. You know that. You know, I've ridden horses and stakes in the past, and I can remember, what was it? Oh, the Campbell one year. The only reason I rode the horse, because the guy says you can do 12. I said, well, can I do 13 or 14 on the horse? And he says, no, it's 12 or you're not on him. I think it was the Campbell that race with John Tamaro, and the owner insisted I do 12. Well, I did 12. I come down the stretch. Guess what? The horse won and paid $70. You know, so that stuff happens. And I'm almost there, man, why has he got to make me do 12 on this horse? I think it was the Campbell, and I think it was Tamara, and it was the owner, one of his regular owners. And there was another race that came up that he put me on a horse in the stake at Monmouth one year. It might have been, wasn't Boyce or some horse. And same scenario. You know, you got to do 12. I did 12. Horse won. You know, so once in a while, logic and rationale gets thrown out the window, and you win a race by, what is it? Is it just called dumb luck, or is it strategy? Who knows what it is? I talked about strategy when it came to My Juliet, and she won the Michigan Mile. The owner come to the barn that morning after he supplemented her to the Michigan Mile, and he says, she can go 7/8, she can go a mile. Gene Euster looked up at him and said, he said, George Weasel, it's a mile, and in little print after the mile, it says, and an eighth. It's a lot different going a mile and an eighth than a mile. Yeah, coming off of a 7/8 race. And he says, well, she's running anyway, and if you don't run her, some other trainer will be running her, because I supplemented her to the race. It was 12 or 15,000. She's running anyway. It would have never been a spot you picked out for her after being Eclipse Award-winning sprint champion, but guess what?
Yeah.
It was a mile and an eighth, and she beat the boys. So who knows?
Well, they're doing the same thing right now. The similar equation is up at Presque, where they've got the Presque Isle Mile, which, you know, sounds nice, Isle Mile, except that it's going a mile and a 16th. So that was the most famous case, though, the Michigan Mile. And in my American racing manuals, when you go to the race, some years it says Michigan Mile, other years it said Michigan Mile and an eighth. At some point, they sort of slapped on the eighth. Tony, a couple of notes. There's some names that, you know, people that, you know, may only play parks, literally once a year when it comes to this kind of a day. And there's some people that, and conditions, I always ask you this because I think it's worthwhile. And for riders coming in, And there's any number of out-of-town riders. I mean, somebody like Sophie Doyle coming in for Larry Jones on Street Band in the Cotillion, you know, that in some cases have never ridden at Philadelphia. What are the challenges in coming in to parks? We talk about the notoriously bad rail, although the last couple of Pennsylvania Derby days, the rail has been better. Talk about those challenges for people coming in that, haven't been there before.
Well, yeah, you just touched on one very important one, but because it's a big race day, you know, they make sure they try to make it, and even bias on the racetrack. That on any given day, maybe other than Kentucky Derby Day is something that jockeys should be familiar with, the dead, you know, the slow inside rail. When it comes to a lot of other things, you know, when you go to some racetracks, one of the things that it used to be at Delaware Park and one or two other tracks that I'd ride at with specific starters, man, the last horse loads and bang, they pop it. Well, you know, that used to be notorious at Delaware Park, and I think it was it Mrs. Frank Wright? I forget who the starter was at the time. Man, that last horse to walk in, you better be tied on the last one, and you better be tied on when you're watching him walk in, because he's gone. Well, Parks, you know, the starter, Brian Kraft, he prides himself in getting a good even start, and nothing's ever rushed. He's got a good gate crew. And, you know, you can be vocal to the point of asking for assistance if they don't know you need assistance. Because you got to understand one thing. Some of these horses shipping in out of town don't have any gate marks on them. You don't know if the horse is notorious being a bad horse in the starting gate. They don't have a mark on every horse that's never run here. So, you know, it's very important that a jockey or trainer says, listen, this horse has been head and tail his last couple starts. He has a tendency to get fractious in there. Communicate that to the starter. Communicate that to the assistant starter. If you're a jock that rides an early race and you're in a horse in the Cotillion of the Belmont, communicate as much as you can to the assistant or to the starter when you ride that early race. You know, say, listen, I ride one in the feature today. Give them info. I think it's always important. We have a good gate crew, and I'm going to tell you what. We got one of the best gate crews in the country. I really take my hats off to those guys. They make jocks work a tiny bit easier because they really work with you. And they have a starter that's open-minded and communicates well with other people. So it's very important. That's probably one of the only idiosyncrasies that I would have to cite at any racetrack, you know, is the communication with the starter and assistants. Is it good? I can tell you it's good at parks, but you have to open your mouth sometimes.
No, that's a good one. And that makes perfect sense. How about some of the, you know, how about some of the locals that, you know, that people particularly will have to make some decisions, those maiden races, notably, there's a bunch of invaders coming in, including Todd Pletcher has shown up with maidens in the special races, and Linda Rice. I think Linda Rice may have the horse to beat in that opener. In fact, Linda's got Tale of Perfect Law, and I thought it was notable. How about Michael Pino getting horses from Shadwell?
Yeah, you know, Michael has a good reputation. He runs horses, turns them over if he has to, and he has a good reputation of having horses run well and placing them well. You know, when you get better horses, sometimes there's no worrying where to place them because it's dictated to you by the type of horse that you have. But he does a good job. You know, he has a good rapport with whoever he's racing. I've ridden for Mike Pino at Delaware Parks, and you name a track that he's ever run horses at, I probably run them and rode for him. So I'm not surprised that he wouldn't have, a high-profile owner under his barn. Guy does a good job. Sometimes he's like every other trainer, a pain in the ass to ride for, but he does a good job, and you got to give him credit.
I hadn't noticed if there were other Shadwell runners that he's had before this one, but he's got what looks to be a first-time starter, Asila, the six in the first race. Jason Service comes back with a second timer in the first. Boom Boom Girl, who's 2-1. But perfect Tale of Perfect Law to me. Linda Rice 6-1. That feels like an overlay on Linda from the outside. Linda's training for Mr. Fipke. And actually, my man, Charlie Bowden, comes through. Charlie says Pino has had horses for a long time from Shadwell. And, of course, Danny Bites as well. And Kieran, Chad Brown, has got some for Shea Camden. And I tell you what, everybody's going to get a few because Shea Camden was busy at the sale. There's going to be quite a few two-year-old next year that come his way. Looking elsewhere on this card, I got to mention in that third race that I brought up, you know, Tony, the turf course, address the turf course at Philly,
yeah,
because it really is underutilized.
Yeah.
It's
underutilized because it doesn't take a lot of beating. You know, it's the kind of turf course that its reputation is worse than its reality. You know, it gets cut up pretty good, and they do race on it sparingly, and they do save it for better days. On days that are questionable, they just take them off, which is to their credit. It doesn't take a lot of beating. They're out there working on it every morning. In fact, I bitch and complain, why don't you guys do this at 10 o'clock? Don't be doing it during training hours, because I don't feel like having my horses look at you while I'm galloping around here on the main track. But, of course, they don't take my advice. I can say the first turn has shown some wear and tear. They moved the fence to where they utilize it on big days, the best part of the turf. I believe the fence is going to be all the way in, and they've been working on it and using it sparingly. They do, like I said, they do try to preserve it because it does not take a tremendous amount of beating. And that's the nature of a lot of turf courses. You know, the more you use them, the more they get torn up. It's just that's the nature of turf racing. You can't change that, you know. And maybe in Europe it's a little different. I don't know. But in this country, the more you use them, the more they get torn up. The thing with Parks turf course, you know, and I see it, and I haven't been on it now, probably in 2 years, but when I was riding on it, its reputation, as soon as people would come in, oh, Jesus Christ, that turf course is terrible. I said, listen, let me explain something to you. The reputation is hard to change of a turf course. At times, it was as bad a turf course as you could wind up riding on. In fact, you know, it got to a point where jockeys would say, no mas, that's it. We're not riding anymore on it. Take the turf races and shove them. You know, that was years ago. It's past that point. It's used, like I said, right and sparingly, and it lasts a lot longer because of that, but it also lasts a lot longer because it's not the inferior bad turf course that it used to be. It's much better. You know, Gerard's done a good job with it. Roy Smith, way before he left, was, you know, getting it to more respectable type of turf course. And Gerard, he knows when to use it, and the racing secretary, even though he's new, he's becomes familiar with the use of the turf course real quick, because you don't want to come and have a turf course come in the day of the big races and it's totally destroyed because you run a bunch of maiden 30s and, you know, inferior races on it. So I give him credit that way. Like I said, the reputation is much worse than the reality.
The horse that I was hinting at earlier this morning in that third race, you've got 7.5 on the turf for the 2-year-old boys, and everybody's going to gravitate to the pair that are coming out of that Saratoga race, and that there's one of those Pletchers against Steve Claseris. You got Qua Moore, the Donegal Honor Code colt, and on the outside, Claseris sends By Land and Sea, which is a Joe and BC homebred. However, there's two interesting potential prices, I thought, in here. And Juan Vasquez has got an entry for Richie's World Stables. He's got a factor colt called A Gray for Carolyn. They're 8-1, the entry. Gabe Saez rides. And I'll tell you who jumped off the page at me a little bit. A second-time starter for Cassius King and for John Service. Running for home. And this is a first-time turf. a Tisnow out of an AP Indy mare, AP Double Cat, and there's some turf pedigree in this family. Running for home is 10-1, and yeah. I think he's got every right to improve on the grass, and this will be the spot.
Well, and John's another one places him well, and the pedigree probably dictates this is where he had to place him. There's one thing that you don't get a chance to do as you do at other racetracks because of our turf course, the way they utilize it. You know, I've been at other tracks, and you'll get a morning where after 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock, you can work a horse to really see if they like it at all. But parks, you don't get that opportunity to ever work. Now, some of these horses maybe came up from Florida. Maybe they did get an opportunity at one point, or who knows where they've been, some of the horses. But you don't get that opportunity at parks to work before you run on the turf. It just doesn't exist. There's no day where they... I can't remember. There had to be some time where they let you work on the turf, but it was for a special horse or something. But so I guess the best thing you can go by is breeding, unless yep. one of these horses came from someplace else. Who knows?
The siblings.
Yeah, seven, right. You got to go by, like as you said, he's bred, for this surface, and we'll go from there. And John doesn't waste time with horses. He gives them a chance, but... what else can you do when it comes to turf horses? I always look at turf horses and people think, you're crazy because people love turf racing. Boy, to have a turf horse is a detriment. When you have to depend an extreme amount on weather and a surface that yeah. is going to be affected by that weather in such a negative way, why would you want a turf horse? But of course, they say, Black, you got that jockey mentality. Shut up. Why would you want to say, shut up, Black? That's another stupid statement you're making. But, I've been known to make a few stupid statements in my time. But, turf racing, people love it. And people love to own these turf horses. So who am I?
Well, I'd hate
to place my livelihood and my business solely on turf racing. Unless I'm in Europe someplace.
Well, the turf, the nice thing for an owner, I mean, typically the turf horse, they're generally going slower. There's less wear and tear. And
jocks bounce better off of the turf than they do the dirt.
I should mention, too, because I'm looking at it and I realize that I just looking down it because I saw Cassius King and Service. This is actually Tyler. This is not John. This is Tyler. Good for him. And he, I tell you, very quietly, we talked to him early in the year, when he was getting his career going, and he's had a very nice year overall. He sent out 43 starters. He's got 7 wins. And, of course, our man Will Schwartz. Will got him his first win of his career early in the year of mainline racing.
Hey, did he win? Was it him or was it his brother broke their maiden at Keeneland? I'm not sure if it was Tyler or Blaine. One of them won their first race. I think it was at Keeneland.
I think you're right, and I know Johnny will know. Johnny's listening. Was that with Will? Was that at Keeneland? Because I do remember that I was watching when it happened, yeah. and I'm not sure which one it might have been. In fact, here, I'll pull it up. I'll tell you right away because I got it right here. It was with Wentz, and it was at Keeneland. Yeah, it was.
What a way to start your career, to winning a race, your first race, especially a memorable occasion at a world-class racetrack like Keeneland. And that's what I just happened to remember that because I
Good
think I
you.
Must have been watching. Yeah, what a feeling you would have getting, I broke my maiden at Keeneland. Like, I broke my maiden at tracks that don't even exist anymore.
There you go. That's true. We should add up how many of your wins came at places with it that are gone. That's a great point.
Yeah, Liberty Bell, Garden State Park,
Atlantic City.
Atlantic City, of course. There's so many tracks. I even rode it a couple times at the little tracks like Dover and Pocono Downs, and it's amazing.
Well, all the Maryland tracks Bel Air, Cumberland, Marlboro.
They're all gone, and Timonium's still there. Bowie is, who knows what Bowie's future is.
Bowie might be coming back.
Man, I have to ride one there if they come back. I won the Campbell there for John Tamaro. Worthy Wonder? I forget the name of the horse I won on. Boy, you know you're getting old when you win a Campbell and you don't even remember what horse it was.
What horse it was? There were stakes. We started the conversation. There's stakes that you don't remember that you even won. Forget about the horse, Tony. We're going to see you on Saturday. We'll have another great day. Weather looks spectacular, by the way.
Yeah.
85, 86. Going to be gorgeous both the Saturday and Sunday. Be gorgeous for the Eagle game as well. And, Tony, I'll see you Saturday.
See you Saturday. It's going to be an enjoyable day. And I might even come dressed real nice. I don't know. You know, which means I might put on a clean shirt and slacks instead of jeans, and maybe a sports jacket. Maybe.
I love it.
I love you, Steve. You keep up the good
love
work.
You too.
Always a pleasure, and thank you.
Tony Black, one and only. And you'll see plenty of pictures of Tony on Saturday from Parks. Let's take a break. Bottom of the hour, a little past, and Steve Haskin will get some Pennsylvania Derby analysis from Steve. See what he thinks of this group and more. I told you, I spent really the whole morning looking at this card, and the figs had come out at Thoroughgraph. That got me going, and I printed the whole card. I don't know if I'll write the whole card up, but probably from the fifth on. The two state bred stakes are terrific. It's going to be a fun day. Back after this, second half, Steve Haskin joins us.